Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a podcast where two best friends and TV writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of this podcast, writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, author of How to Fight Presidents, student of the sea, and guy who in a job interview chose to eat food he was allergic to, knowing it would make him very sick later because he wanted the interviewee to think that he was a team player, Daniel O'Brien. And I am joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say
what's up, everybody? I'm Soren Bowie. I'm a homeowner, small business CEO, a SEP IRA investor in the streets, and a high-yield bonder in the sheets. In high school, I had no prom. Instead, I had a dance in a barn and then a bonfire in the middle of a cattle ranch where no one, to my knowledge, had sex. But the boys did melt their shoes by trying to jump over the fire to impress the girls. Do you want to know the name of that ranch, Dan?
I would love to.
Flying Dog Ranch. Of Flying Dog Brewery fame started in Aspen, and now you know the rest of the story.
Wow. I feel like someone has started writing down his intros in advance. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Jiminy's, maker of sustainable dog food made with cricket protein. Cricket protein is a superfood, delicious, nutritious, sustainable, humane, and prebiotic. To learn more and save 15% on your first purchase, go to jiminys.com/QQ and use the code QQ15 at checkout.
Thanks to Hawthorne for supporting Quick Question. Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co and using your promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase.
We're going to get into the show, but we're going to start as we've been doing for 7 months now, with a check-in to see how each other is doing with the COVID-19 crisis. Do you have any updates on that front?
I didn't write this part.
Well, who could have seen it coming?
No, I'm really worried it's just not ever going to end at this point. Like, I've given up on the possibility of even going back to, like, a dine-in theater, which is something I adore. And any sort of thing that I... of the old world, like, that I tell my son about, and I'm like, no, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, it's I feel the same way. I'm really I've reached, like, an unreasonable mental stage for myself. It's the same feeling I get if I'm at a red light that I think is going too long, or if someone is in front of me in the store. I could be a patient person, but, like, something in my brain clicks in and just goes, no, I've waited long enough. This person should be done now. Or this light should change now. So I'm going to just drive through it. I never do that, obviously, but I'm very much at the, this is no longer acceptable, so I'm going to go through this light even though it's red and there's danger there. Yeah. That's how I feel about the coronavirus thing right now, where I'm just like, I think I've been more than patient and responsible on my end. Frankly, the virus is being unreasonable. So I'm going to just start living my life again.
Well, it's so sad. The trajectory is all wrong. Like, they opened up parks here, which is nice. You can actually, like, go to a park and your child can play on the playground. But you look at the numbers, and the numbers are bad. The numbers are, like, worse. Everything's getting worse. Everybody's still getting infected. And it's like, this is not... there's no set plan for what to do here, and we're past the point of a plan.
Yeah. Ended up with a little bit about this. I went to the Catskills to go backpacking. Nice. We could talk about that in a little bit, but ran into two other backpackers who were both from Manhattan, and we were just talking. I was like, "Hey, I just moved here like a year and a half ago," and the guy says, "So how do you like the city? How are you enjoying Manhattan?" And I was like, "Oh my God, live music, the theater, great restaurants. What's not to love?" And we all laughed, and then we were all sad.
Yeah, I mean, even I take my son to school in a little carrier on the back of my bike, and there's room for two kids. My neighbor goes to the same school. He's another little boy who I could easily take both of them, and it would be said it was, like, a cool thing to do and, like, ride them to school on the bicycle. But they're in different classes, different little pods, and so we can't do that. There are about five kids that are all Ronan's age that live on our street. And every once in a while, we'll see one of them playing out in the street, and Ronan's just, his face is on the window, like a child looking at a puppy in a pet store. I got a lot of peas today, I've noticed.
Yeah.
He just wants to play so bad. He just wants the interaction with other kids. And sometimes we just break. We just give it to him. We put a mask on him, and he gets to go outside and play with the other kids. But it's like there's just so much you can't do.
Yeah. Well, Catskills was fun.
Yeah, so I want to hear about this. Is that all right if I start with that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, Dan, quick question.
Go.
Did you go alone?
No, I went with my brother David, who is doing all the social distance things that he's supposed to be doing. I'm neither of us are worried about each other. We've had our tests, and we were showing no symptoms. And even if we were... it doesn't really matter. Even if we were asymptomatic, we wouldn't be able to do this kind of climbing because it would just destroy our lungs. And it didn't, which is nice. But I did learn that I can't really do this anymore.
Oh, really?
It was, I want to train and get better at it, but it was like I backpacked Yosemite years ago, and then my brother and I did the Rockies in Colorado in October 6 years ago, which... Like, I started too far ahead, I think. Those were the first two things that I did, is jumping a few spaces in line. And when we did Colorado, it was, like, at sometimes blindingly snowy up there. And we're so high up, and it's like, raining and sleeting. And that gave me this real sense of confidence that I can still do this. Anytime I want, I can strap 45 pounds on my back and walk up a mountain, because it's just one foot in front of the other. And the elevation changes just wrecked me. I know it's not the kind of things that you're used to, because Colorado, you're way up there. But there was, on our second day, it started out with 2,500 feet jumping up to 3,940 in 9/10 of a mile. So you're really just walking what feels like straight up a mountain, and it's very steep, and it's just hard. It's and like my brother's in much better shape than me, so he's just zooming up the mountain.
Oh, that's frustrating.
I'm gonna count my steps, and when I get to 100, I'm gonna take a little break and just breathe and drink my water, and then I'm gonna do that again. And I just had to like count my steps the entire trip and like psych myself up for it, because there were times when I'm halfway up this fucking mountain and I'm like wistfully thinking, maybe I can break my ankle and then they'd have to send a helicopter, because I don't want to go up or down. I want to stay here and have someone save me. But you know, you can't do that. And I think the only reason I got through it was because you don't really have an option, which was, you know,
yeah,
what it is, I guess. It was still, I'm focusing on how difficult it is for an out-of-shape person to climb, but it was beautiful. I'd never been to the Catskills before. We climbed three different mountains, and we saw amazing views, and it's like, you're looking at the Catskills and the Hudson Valley down below, and all the leaves are changing. It was like the perfect time of year to do this, and I had a great blast, and as difficult as it was for me, like, the day I got home, was texting my brother, and was like, you know, there's this thing called the 35 Club, where you climb all the 3,500-foot mountains in the Catskills, and then you can join this club. So I'm already doubling down on this thing that I'm not good at, because it was so much fun.
But that's, I mean, it's amazing how quickly your body acclimates to that type of thing. If you continue to do it, you'd feel much better, I think.
Yeah.
The thing that you described, though, on that, you like taking it in those small chunks like that, is exactly what you're supposed to do. I don't know if you know this. Have you ever seen or heard of a movie called Touching the Void?
I feel like maybe you've talked to me about it before.
That's
my memory.
There's these two climbers, Simon Yates and Joe Simpson, who I think they're on their way up Everest, and they got stuck. Some mountain. I can't remember. K2 maybe? I can't remember what they were on. But they got stuck, and all of a sudden one of them fell off the edge of a cliff. The other one just had his rope, but like he couldn't haul him back up. And so they just sat there on this edge of the cliff for a little while. They couldn't talk to each other because the storm was blowing. It was night. And eventually the guy on top, Simon Yates, just cut his rope because he was like, I have to save myself. And cut his rope, went back down to base camp, and was like telling the guy at base camp, like, no, Joe's gone. He's gone. And the next day or the next night, Joe, with broken legs, two broken legs, crawls through their shit pit, which is like where you have like a set place where you pee and poop when you're camping mm-hmm. on a backcountry like that, comes crawling through that into camp. And so he had fallen down into a crevasse, broken both of his legs, broken a bunch of bones, and then crawled out and was like, they talk about, he doesn't, by the way, he doesn't like, doesn't think poorly of Simon for cutting the rope. He's like, I would have done the same thing. He had to save himself. But he talks about how he, as he was crawling across just like jagged scree, he was like, all I got to do is I need to get to that rock right there. And it was like 5 feet in front of him. And he's like, I can't believe I got there. Now I just got to get to that one. And he just did that for miles and miles down Everest, scraping up his stomach and his thighs and everything, and crawled down Everest with two broken legs.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's nice that they're still friends.
I know. It's pretty
bizarre.
Hardcore.
I feel like even if you, like, the emotion part of my brain would override the logic part of my brain. Because I would also think, you did what you had to do. I would have done the same thing. You have to save yourself. I still hate your fucking guts. You can't come to my wedding. I'm going to train my kids to beat up your kids. This is like a hate that is part of my family now. You understand? This is a generational hate.
It was in the Peruvian Andes. I was wrong. It's Suila Grande. Suila Grande? I don't know what that is. Some crazy mountain. But still, yeah, like, you how can you forgive that person ever?
Yeah.
It's like, you'd be hanging there, dangling, and be like, that motherfucker hasn't pulled me up yet. Like, where's the adrenaline? I've heard of mothers lifting cars off of babies. Pull me up, motherfucker. But yeah, you did the right thing. I also am curious, is it backcountry camping that you did, or were you guys like at a campsite?
Backcountry camping.
Hell yeah. So how long was the trek in total? Was it a big, like,
it was 20 miles. We wanted to go for longer, but A, I was getting pretty worn out, and B, we knew on our third day that we were going to wake up in the rain, and I was just like, we cut it short because we thought, like, let's just get out of this while we're ahead. We had a perfect, you know, 70-degree day, and then a little bit cooler day the next day. The sun was always out. It was very nice. Let's not mar this trip by waking up in the rain and having to put a tent away in the rain and then just be miserable and cold and wet for what was supposed to be the easiest part of the hike, but still would have tacked on another, I want to say, 9 miles.
Mm-hmm. And how did you sleep on this trip, Daniel?
The same way that I've always slept in a tent when I've ever been backpacking is I'm lying there uncomfortable with my eyes closed, and like, I don't really think I sleep, but my body gets the rest that it needs, if that makes sense.
Yes, totally.
And I'm sure I'm dozing off every once in a while, but mostly I'm just sitting there trying to count myself to sleep, but also just like, this is, I'm relaxed. I'm not like, it's not like a restless time or anything.
I feel the same way, even though I'm just recently, all I've been doing in a tent is like camping in my backyard with my son to try and like mix things up a little. But even when I do that now, I'm on a Therm-a-Rest. I'm like an air mattress back there, you know, like a little camping air mattress, but still, like, there's distance between me and the ground. There's some level of comfort. And when I was younger, I could sleep like a baby on that kind of thing. And now it's just like, it's the worst thing in the world. I think I'm awake the entire night, but that can't possibly be true.
Yeah.
And then the next day I'm like, well, I'm alive. So obviously I got something. But that's just how camping is now. It's like,
yeah.
There's no way that I go to sleep at night and then wake up in the morning with the sun and I'm like, ah, time to do it all again. That was great.
The other thing about backcountry camping, or I mean like camping in general, this is going to sound like an ad, but it's not. I got to go to REI for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
That's a camping store for anyone who doesn't know. It's like hiking and like rock climbing, all kinds of things you would do for camping. And I used to go a bunch more when I was in California and doing more of this stuff. And I haven't in, it's got to be 6 years now. And REI is so fucking cool. It's the closest thing to the kind of feeling I had walking into a toy store when I was a kid that I can muster. They're always building new shit for camping, and it's always smart. All of it is just like, I don't know who's designing this stuff, but they just know, like, this needs to be durable, this needs to be compactable, and this needs to solve a problem that you have when you're camping. And so it just feels like it's designed by rocket scientists, how perfectly everything, like, fits into each other. And they also solve problems that I don't need, which is a dangerous thing about REI, because I walk in there and I'll see, like, a specific spatula thing that is just for making s'mores. Like, you enclose the s'more ingredients in this, like, steel box that's attached to a stick, and then you roast that over the fire. Oh. And I'm looking at that like, well, now that I see it, I can't imagine how I've ever made s'mores without it. Surely this is the technology that I need, because what am I going to use, a stick, like a fucking idiot?
Yeah. It does. You very quickly feel like this could become your personality when you walk into an REI. You're like,
yeah,
maybe I do wear these types of shirts that are just like these button-down fleeces. Like, maybe I wear these three-quarter-length prana pant shorts that are just for exclusively for climbing. I think I could get away with that. but I know what you mean. There's a place called Summit Mountain in Colorado, in Glenwood Springs, that's like, when I used to go there in there as a kid, I was just like, I just want all of this stuff. At the front of it, there's ice picks and things like that. I'd never ice climbed in my life, and I was like, yeah, I think I should be an ice climber.
No, I did the same thing. I was looking at the ice climbing stuff, because a coworker of mine does that kind of stuff, and it seems really scary, but he seems really into it. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I've never done this before. I don't know where I'd go, but maybe a good first step would be buying all this stuff. Then I'd have to, right?
And so, did you get a stove specifically for this, or did your brother already have one, or how did you guys do it?
He already had one. He had one of those very small, I think I've always called it a pocket rocket, but I don't know if that's what anyone else calls it.
Did you have to prime it at all, or did it just immediately light up like with a blue flame?
It immediately lights up, and it gets so hot so quick.
That's a whisper. That's a isobutane stove.
Yeah. And we made those, just like those camping meals, you know?
Yeah, you like, just pour it in and pour water over it.
Pour water in this thing. Yeah, it's great.
That's what when I go camping with people who don't do that, and they're like, we're going to make pancakes, we're going to make bacon and stuff like that, I'm like, please don't. Please don't. Because then I have to feel like I need to make something at some point, and then I also feel like I need to clean the dishes, and there's nothing worse than trying to clean a bunch of pots and pans in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, just do it the very simple way. Everybody's responsible for themselves, please.
One time I went camping with friend of ours, friend of the show, Michael Swaim, and Abe Epperson, and a bunch of other friends of ours, and I was just had finished riding high off Yosemite and like real backcountry backpacking and feeling like I can crush this, and I didn't really investigate where we were going. They just said, we're gonna go camping for the weekend, and I showed up with like my full pack and dressed as I would if I'm camping somewhere in the summer, where like the only clothes I brought are like, you know, shorts that are breathable and like sleeveless shirts, and everyone else is there in jeans and t-shirts, and I didn't realize we were going like car camping, where you just park and they set up at like a place with a full barbecue and people are like grilling burgers. And I was like, oh, I brought beef jerky and rice. Is that not what we're doing?
Yeah, I did a trip with them like that once, and Robert Evans, when he came, set up what I can only describe as a yurt. Like, it was semi-permanent, what he had set up. And inside, it had no sleeping bags. It was just like a bunch of throw pillows. And I was like, I don't even know what this is. Are you moving here? What is going on? And they're one of those people who are like, we're going to make feasts. And I'm like, I don't want to make feasts.
Hey guys, Daniel here with an ad. Did you know feeding your dog with foods made from cricket protein uses less land and water to produce? And it drastically eliminates greenhouse gas emissions compared to traditional animal protein dog food. Did you know that? I didn't. Meet Jiminy's, nutritious and sustainable food and treats for your dogs made with cricket protein and other delicious plant-based ingredients like sweet potatoes, oats, peanut butter, and flax. One thing I love about this product is they are made with more humane and safe production methods. Crickets are raised in cricket condos inside barns, which allow them to live in a way as close as possible to how they would live in the natural world. Harvesting time comes near the end of their natural life cycle, which is approximately 6 weeks. This comes after they have mated and laid their eggs. Insects raised in clean indoor farms have been found to be free of common pathogens that plague the meat industry, like E. coli, Salmonella, Staph, and Listeria. I got these treats. Jiminy's was kind enough to send me some because they know about my dog Jackson. He's a Jack Russell Dachshund mix and the sweetest boy in the world. They sent me the dog biscuit bundle. I got the original flavor and peanut butter and blueberry, and he absolutely loves them. He goes crazy for these treats. Peanut butter used to be like a special occasion birthday treat, and now he gets the peanut butter and blueberry flavor all the time, and he just loves it. It made the best dog in the world even better, thanks to Jiminy's. And if you would like to learn more and save 15% on your first purchase, go to jiminys.com/QQ and use QQ15 at checkout. That's JIMINYS.com/QQ with code QQ15. That's QQ15. Another thing that I wanted to do at first, but I chickened out on, was because before we settled on Catskills, we were looking at the Appalachian Trail, and I wanted to live out a dream of mine, which was catch a fish in one of their streams, clean it myself, and cook it right there. Ooh. like truly stream to table kind of thing. But I got nervous about that because it's not a style of fishing that I've done before. You just need to be a lot more accurate and like spot the fish and then catch the fish. It's almost like fly fishing. And I've also never cleaned a fish by myself, and I didn't want the first time I did that to be the time that we are in the woods as it's getting dark, relying on me to provide food. Which brings me to a problem that maybe you can help me address, because I watch a lot of YouTube videos about cleaning fish, like filleting them properly and everything like that, and it seems pretty simple, but I want to go somewhere and like practice. You know, when I'm on the boat that I'm on, the staff will do it for you. They do it on the way back to land if you've caught anything. So I can also watch them, but really I want like, I don't know, 4 or 5 fish and a guy who is an expert next to me talking me through it. So I just like practice and do this thing, and I don't believe that's a service that exists, but it should.
I feel like you could ask those guys, right? They're your fish. And be like, well, if I just try and do this right next to you, will you just give me some pointers? I'm sure they wouldn't be too pleased about it. But do you tip on those boats?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I tip everywhere.
Okay. Then I can't foresee why they wouldn't let you do that, and like they'd talk you through it.
Yeah. Maybe the next time I go fishing.
Put me Monday. On the phone. Call me. Put me on the phone, and I will ask on your behalf.
Thank you. That's what I needed.
Well, that's very exciting,
Dan. They're talking to you, and like, this is your... What are you... Are you his ward? No, he's my buddy. Is he responsible for you? In a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, elaborate, because I'm not sure I think I understand it totally what you mean. But yes. I think that's great that you went camping. And I haven't been backcountry camping in a very, very long time, and I miss it a lot.
It's really good. It's difficult, but, you know, like I said, I'm already gearing up for the next time I do this. And, you know, it's fun to plan future trips.
I should ask, sorry, Dan. Are you a good packer? Like, do you pack your bag well, or is it...
No, absolutely not.
I could really help you with that.
I bet you could. I feel like you could help me fit the pack better. Because I know there's a way. I've watched the way that you're supposed to, like, here's where you tighten the straps, here's where you loosen the straps, and here's the scientifically the best place for the weight to be.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hurt you too much. But I also know just intuitively, it's never going to be completely painless. Like, it's
right.
A bunch of weight on your back, so it's going to be uncomfortable while you're walking up a mountain. But I still feel like it's another one of those things where I watch tutorials on it and my brother explains it to me, but I think someone needs to like put their hands on me and do this, because I'm gonna do what I think is right, and then David is like, how does that feel? I'm like, I don't know how I feel. Are you kidding me? I can't answer that question.
Yeah, that's... It's like, so REI, they will talk you through that stuff. And like, yeah, there's just no ego there at all. They're not like, they don't have any expectation for like where you should be starting. They're just like, oh, okay, here, let me explain exactly what we're looking at. Like, here's where the buckles are. Here's, you should feel more bruising on your hips as opposed to like strain in your neck. And I don't know. There's,
yeah,
I've watched people pack. I watch my wife pack sometimes, even when we're not even going camping. We're just like going to Tucson. And I'm like, what are you doing? Your weight distribution's all over in this suitcase. This is, you got to roll your clothes up. Take out all that air.
Just for like flying to Tucson?
Well, I'm a weird packer. Yeah.
Okay.
Like it's a point of pride to me that I bring the smallest suitcase possible, mm-hmm, or the smallest duffel bag possible, so that when I get there, people are like, is this it? That's like, that's the sound I'm waiting for.
Oh, that's weird.
I want to be like, yeah, travel light. And so what that means is that I cram every single thing down into the smallest amount of space possible.
I think one of the things that certainly separates us, I don't like to make the decision before I go somewhere. And this isn't necessarily with camping or anything, but when I'm picking clothes for like a trip to see my parents, or I'm going to go on vacation somewhere, it's like, I can't sit in my closet and stare at my clothes and just be like, well, let's see, I'm going to be there for 4 days, so pack that amount of clothes and maybe something if it rains. Like, I don't, that takes a lot of the fun out of it for me. So like, I want to bring a bunch of my stuff that I like and see how I feel when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
You, I imagine, are not that way.
No, I know exactly what I'm going to wear every single day of the trip. And something is like a switch that flips in me when I go camping or travel. That's like, ordinarily I'm not an anal person at all. It's like, I'm pretty free and easy about stuff. I don't like making big decisions, but, or like I put stuff back where it goes. But when I'm camping, it's very, very different. I'm not pleasant. Like I know where everything goes and it has to go there. I know, like at night when we're cleaning up the kitchen or like the kitchen area, like I want to put everything away. And people are like, we're just getting up in the morning to eat breakfast again. I'm like, yes, but we bomb proof every night. Like we make sure that everything is away. And I do it even a little bit when I just travel like by plane. I think there's just some spillover, I guess.
Yeah. Oh. That's about all I've got to say about camping and backpacking. But I had a quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is shaping up to be a pretty quarantine and quarantine adjacent heavy episode. Mm-hmm. Is there something, a habit or habits you've developed in quarantine that was new that you hope to carry over when you're out of quarantine?
Mm. You want to go first?
Yeah. Mine's a simple one. I do so much more completely silent walking now. Not silent in that like I used to scream when I walked, but I don't have my headphones on anymore. Like I'm not listening to podcasts or music, and I'm just going for long walks to like think my thoughts and organize how I feel, I guess. And like some of it is writing. I'm walking while I'm thinking of what I want to write for a script or for a side thing or whatever. And some of it is walking, thinking about this podcast, believe it or not. But it's something that I started doing towards the beginning of this, where I realized, well, I already went for a run today, so I can't do that again. And my gym is closed. Work is done. I don't want to just sit in the same couple of spots I've been sitting in the entire day, whether I'm watching TV or doing work on my computer, it's the same spot. And I can't go anywhere. And so the option was really just like, walk, just pick a direction and start going. And it's been very soothing. It's been very peaceful. And it's the kind of thing that I hope doesn't eventually get replaced with going to a movie once a week or going to a restaurant a couple of nights a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very meditative.
I agree with you. I'm
thoughtful now, Soren. I know I used to be a backpacker, but now I've decided my thing is I'm thoughtful guy.
That was a quick move. Although I think a lot of seamen are thoughtful, mm-hmm, men as well, are thoughtful people as well. Like people, you always see those scuppers, I want to say, out there, uh-huh, on the high seas in their yellow slickers, just staring off into the clouds in the distance and thinking of,
yeah,
of their selkies or mermaids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I've changed my mind. I'm back to being a fisherman now.
You could be both.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's one that I've got that I've been doing a lot more of, which is, so my son, generally when I would like hang out with my son, we're just going to be playing whatever game he wants to play. And that gets really taxing after a while because kids are not, at 4 or 5, like they're not good at making up games. So you're just doing the same thing over and over. His big game is we play construction site. And what that means is I cannot make it any more complicated than this or he freaks out. You set up cones. That's the construction site. They've laid new asphalt or whatever. And then I am a guy in a car who comes by, rolls down his window and asks the construction worker what they're doing there. He tells me and then I drive away. That's got to be like, that's the game. Mm-hmm. And so I hate it. And then after a while, it makes me begrudge having to play with him. So instead, what I've started doing is involving him in more of my things. So like if I can't find time to work out while I'm in quarantine, then I'll be like, well, I can start biking. And he's heavier. I put him in the carrier in the back of the bike. I can ride up these hills around Culver City. And he's down with it. Like, he loves being involved in anything that I'm doing. When I built the bench, I was like, yeah, you can come help me build this bench. And like, he's there to like, he wants to help so badly. And mm-hmm. in a way that's not, it's not making it even a tougher chore on me. It's like, I'm like, go get me this 2x4 and he will get it and bring it to me.
That's great.
And he's so all about it. And painting, like he's all about painting. So just involving him in the daily tasks that I do around the house is not something my dad ever did. He would just sort of take care of stuff because he knew that it was going to be a harder process if we were there. And I'm just involving him more. And like the curve has been steep where like he's learned so much immediately that he's actually pretty helpful and he likes doing it and then get shit done. And I'm like, I should just do this forever. Like, I think he would look back on these moments and be like, yes, my dad and I used to build these things, or we used to paint houses, like the house, or we'd putty up the walls. Yeah. Anyway, I've really enjoyed that.
That's great. Especially like nowadays and even in the future, it seems like he's going to have a whole bunch of skills that people his age when he grows up don't all have. Like, there are a lot of things that I don't know how to do. Not because my dad wouldn't teach me. He would. I just, like, never showed an interest in how to fix a car when that breaks or how to build a thing. Because I was like, no. That's a dad thing. I'll wait till you fix the car, and then I'll wreck it again. Don't worry.
we're
both part of this in a way.
I can remember as a child listening to my dad in the garage being like, now work, motherfucker, I'll tear you apart. Like yelling at the stuff that he's trying to fix and being like, I'm not going down there. There's no way. And he wouldn't ask us to come. So it was like, I didn't learn any of that stuff. And then he knew it all because he worked on a ranch for a while when he first graduated from college, like a dude ranch. And so they just went around like fixing everything on the property. But I learned all that later just watching YouTube videos.
Yeah. Well, that's a really sweet answer.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey guys, we're back again with another ad. This is for Hawthorne. Hawthorne is a premium, tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. If you're looking to take your self-care routine to the next level, Hawthorne helps you get high-quality products tailored specifically for your needs. And they give you free shipping on your order. And if you decide you're not satisfied with your product, they'll even give you free shipping on the return and give you new suggestions based on your feedback.
They offer so many different things that you probably aren't even using right now. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to be using my bath soap as a facial cleanser. Well, Hawthorne knew that. And Hawthorne could send you a facial cleanser. They'll send you lotions that are for the different skins on your hands as opposed to your face. They have all kinds of shampoos, conditioners for every type of hair, every type of skin. They know it all.
Did you take their quiz, Soren? They make you take a personalized quiz to find out what the right things are for you.
And I loved it. I felt very seen with their quiz.
I think the thing that was most helpful to me is that there was a no judgment, I don't know answer for all of the things on their quiz. Because the quiz will be like, what kind of skin do you have? Is it greasy? Is it oily? Is it dry? I don't know. I'm like, yeah, good. I don't know. I don't know what my body is like. Please. Yeah. Please accept me anyway.
And not only that, they'll give you options for the things that are going to be best suited for your body, but also best suited for the environment too. Like they've got, if they're asking you what are you looking for in a deodorant, you can say, I don't want to sweat as much, I don't want to smell as much, or you can say, I want something that's aluminum free, or I want something that's all natural. Like I want something better for me and for the environment. And they will give you that.
Right. I took the quiz and they gave me a bunch of suggestions for what would work best for me. And I got a bunch of those products and they're great. I got a cologne set. It comes in two. There's like a work cologne and a play cologne for nighttime. And it's great. I've had the same cologne for most of my life. And now I'm switching over to the work cologne. There's something like very masculine about it. It's not very perfumey, which I really like a whole lot. It just fits exactly what I'm looking for right now in a smell.
Yeah, I happened to put some on my wrist just to smell the different ones, and my wife walked by and was like, whoa, what is that? She really liked it. And I thought, I see now. I see why people actually wear cologne.
So do what we did. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co and using promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase. That's HAWTHORNE.co, promo code QQ, 10% off your first purchase.
There's something I do want to talk to you about that involves my quarantine routine.
Okay.
And I want to ask you if you have any idea what this might be or if I should be worried. I've started running at night.
Okay.
Because it's after my family's gone to bed and they don't need me or anything. And I can leave the house for half an hour, 45 minutes.
How late at night?
I usually leave around 9:30 or 10 and get back a little before 11. And there's an area that I run in that's... it's like near the oil derricks. Do you know where those are or like what those look like?
Nope.
Those, you know,
I know what they look like. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's areas of LA where there are still huge oil fields and not a lot of people are around, and it's nice because it's completely silent. There's nobody there. Sometimes I see owls. And the other day I was doing that and I was running down this back road and came across a dead rabbit that I first thought had been hit by a car. And then as I got closer, I realized that his body was completely intact, and next to it was its head cleanly cut off.
Ooh.
Like a severed, like just, somebody, I don't know that yet. A rabbit had been decapitated and then left there strewn out in mm-hmm. the road. And I was like trying to figure out if I should be there or not anymore. If that's a place I should still run.
What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid that it's
getting your head ripped off.
Yeah, I think it's some sort of cult thing. Honestly, that's my biggest fear, is that there's some animal sacrifice thing happening and they're like ditching the bodies there because nobody's there. And I don't want to run into that.
Yeah, you'd hate to run into that. I didn't go animal sacrifice immediately. I
Ooh.
Thought cat.
There's no reason why they would eat the body.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they are like notorious for leaving things places, I guess.
Yeah.
Just like I guess it usually happens when they're like a cat that belongs to someone. I don't know if they just do it in the wild as like, this is the altar of my sacrifices or whatever. But yeah, that was my first thought, was a cat was playing with the rabbit the way that cats do, and that resulted in the head getting ripped off. And then I was like, all right, well, this game is less fun now. I'm gonna go.
Right. This thing doesn't move anymore.
Freak someone else out.
Maybe it was. I mean, I'm hoping it was some sort of animal that did it. I feel much better about that. The reason I think I jumped to animal sacrifice was that I shot a movie like a little before I worked at Cracked, a movie called Blind Ambition. And part of it was filmed up in Griffith Park, which is like a big forest area for people who don't know, in the middle of LA. And you have to have a Forest Service person there with you when you're doing it. We're shooting in the middle of the night, and this Forest Service person is sort of like walking the perimeter of the shot and stops, takes out a plastic bag, a big trash bag, and puts something in the trash bag and then knots it up. And we were like, what was that? And she goes, ugh, goat head. And we were like, what? And she said, they drop them off up here sometimes. And so
oh,
I think that it's some part of some animal sacrifice type thing, and then they just put the carcasses up there when they're done with them. And so she just like had this goat head that she was completely unfazed by it because it's so common. So yeah. My first thought was, oh no, it's here too. Of course it's here. Nobody comes to the oil derricks. People only die here. And I'm nervous. And the other thing is I've been running. Before this, I had another running spot where I would run at night and had to stop there because I was running one time in the bushes. I saw a pair of shoes. And I was like, that's weird. And then I realized that it was a fucking human standing in the bushes hiding from me. And I was like, I can't come back here.
Did you even try to talk to this person?
No.
You like, don't be scared of me?
No.
Huh.
No, I ran. I wasn't for it.
Yeah. I mean, those two things are enough for me to say, no, maybe don't run there. There are LA's a big
areas.
Place.
But these are two different areas. I had to stop running at that first one when somebody was hiding in bushes as I ran past. But now the rabbit head thing has me a little freaked out. If it's human, I don't want to be there. But it does make me feel better that you think it might be a cat.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe I'm stupid or maybe I'm naive. I think, like, just you telling me that goat head story, my honest reaction is like, people are still doing stuff like that. Like, I know cults still exist, but they just became like more sophisticated, like the vow cults, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where they're just tricking vulnerable, highly susceptible people out of their money and their time and their lives. I didn't think people were still doing like, this requires a blood animal sacrifice.
I didn't know they ever were. I thought we found out that the satanic cults of the 70s and stuff were all a myth, but
yeah.
Apparently it happens.
Man.
I don't know, man.
We'll be wrapping this up soon, but we wanted everyone to hear a little some housekeeping and some news. This isn't really a scoop or anything like that, so put your pencils down, everybody. But there's going to be another reunion of four people who you know from Cracked who sit at a diner. And I don't know legally if we can use the name, but it's a reunion of Michael, Katie, Soren, and myself talking about pop culture. We don't have a date for when we're going to release it yet, but it's going to be a brand new episode written for quarantine Zoom times. And we had our first writing brainstorm meeting about it yesterday. That was really fun to see everybody, and B, I think we're going to have a good episode out of this.
Yeah, I was amazed at how we all just fell right back into it. How easy it was to just talk about these pop culture things that we're noticing and like start to develop the essay that you need for each one of these with everybody. And like, it was like putting on an old glove. I don't know. Yeah. That's not a great metaphor, but we just slid right back into it, and it was very nice. It was very nice to see everybody and that there was no like weirdness or anything. It was just great.
Yeah.
So this is something that Dan has sandbagged us into, because we did an event where we talked to some fans live during quarantine about the days of After Hours, which is now started 10 years ago.
Oof.
And then during it, Dan was like, why don't we do a new episode? And you know, there's thousands of people watching. We couldn't just be like, I don't want to do that, Dan.
No, I specifically was like, wow, we're raising so much money for charity right now. If we get over 10,000, we will do another episode. And like, there was no room. Anyone would have been, it would have been clear what someone was doing if they were like, hey, Dan, a word off camera for a second.
And then we come back and you're like, we're not doing an episode. I have decided. And then there's somebody just silently nodding.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're doing another episode, which is also very exciting. It's exciting for all of us, I think.
Yeah. Do you feel like, because I already started writing my part immediately after the meeting that we had, do you feel like you've brought anything from your time at American Dad into the way you think about this show, or the way you write it, if you have started writing it?
I haven't started writing it yet. I bet I do. I bet my dialogue has gotten sharper than it used to be, because it wasn't like a huge chunk of our job previously. Our job was so much more focused on being smart and being like relaying a bunch of information in a very short period, like a very short sentence or short paragraph. And then also a huge chunk of it was writing our columns, which was like a very different type of writing. And this was a muscle I kind of could flex a little bit, but I wasn't particularly good at it. And then just having been on a show that's exclusively dialogue, like I think I've gotten a lot better at it, and watching people who are also very, very good at it. So I would say that the dialogue will probably be a little sharper. I say that now having written nothing. I may turn it in and we're going to be like, we can't use this.
I think so. We've almost always written these episodes solo, and I feel like something that I've immediately taken from last week tonight is we write almost all of that in a group. Like, chunks of script are divided amongst multiple writers, and then it gets put together and smoothed over and rewritten a few times. And that's something that we never did at Cracked, that I immediately thought, let's do that with this episode. There's four of us, we're all writers, and there are like very clear, there's the this section, the this argument section, and then there's the you know, this next essay. And that was something that a few years being on this show was like, oh, this makes the writing much easier. We should do that. We should have been doing that at After Hours and shared the burden of each episode a little bit. There's some joy to be had in like soul authorship and feeling like you start to finish formed a thing, but yeah.
It's way easier not to.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, you feel good about it at the end, but that's because it was a pain in the ass the entire, you stressed out and cried at night trying to figure it out on your own.
Right. It's the difference between I poured my blood, sweat, and tears into this and... Yeah, I did the last part.
Yeah. Also, I think it makes you much more amenable to criticism and to like changes when it's you don't own the entire thing. I remember bringing in an idea, like not even pitching an idea at the beginning. Just like I would be like the episode on stuff ruined with math, like sitcoms ruined with simple math, mm-hmm. and like how hard I worked on that and figuring out which ones to use, and then brought it in, and I was like, and it's here, and it's done.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, what if we change this? And I'm like, it's done. It's fucking done.
This Sorry, is maybe you don't understand. I wasn't looking for feedback. I was looking for praise.
Yeah, this should go to the Library of Congress right now. Because history's going to want to remember what happened here. But yeah, I look forward to writing it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And we'll update everyone where they can watch it, when it's going to be out, and what charities they can support.
Yes. Yes.
And if they and if $10,000 goes to the charity.
No, Daniel. Daniel, can I word? Just like a word. I'm gonna text you. We're not fucking doing that. But yeah. We should support like the other people. Are you writing for anybody else? Or are you doing like 1-900 hot dog or anything?
Not yet. We have a hiatus coming up, and I was thinking of. Sean has asked me to write about a very silly movie that I'm unreasonably attached to, so I might do that. I just, you know, need to get through this season first, and then I'll have some time freed up.
Yeah. That 1-900 hot dog, for people who don't know, is Sean Baby, who used to write for Crack, Sean Riley, and Robert Brockway have created their own website that's like just a throwback to the very funnest times of Cracked. They're writing some really, really funny stuff.
Based it's really on, one of the only places for smart, long-form internet comedy right now. A thing that seemed to be everywhere for a while, and now it's just completely gone. You can't find it anywhere. They're doing it. They're finding a way to do it, and I think everybody who is attracted to Cracked from working there in the first place is really hoping this thing succeeds, because otherwise there just won't be this thing anymore, you know?
Right.
Long form internet comedy will just be dead.
I refuse to believe there's no appetite for it out there. Is the movie that you're going to do Tiptoes, Dan?
No.
Okay, good.
Then I don't want to spoil anything. I mean, I'll tell you after.
Okay. Well, that's an episode. I do need to go find some information about like a how to find us on Twitter and all of that. But while I do that, I know that you recently started looking at buying a home, which I think is very exciting. And I know you asked for some help from me because I've done it in the past. And I can't remember what your price range is. Can you just tell me what like range you're looking at, like what you can afford?
That's a really great question. I was looking at a couple of places in New Jersey in like the $225,000 range. And that seems like with some doing, with some saving, with some smarts, that will be certainly very doable.
Wow, you really just answered that question.
Yeah, I know. I really want to buy a house.
All right. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Soren_LTD. You can put in your application to follow Dan at DOB_Inc. I don't really know what the process is to be able to follow him on there, but please, please don't message me and ask. Or you can follow QuickQuestion at QQ_Soren and Dan. We have an email, which is QQ with Soren and Daniel at gmail.com. That's in fact, probably the best way to reach Michael. I think he knows how to access that now. And you can follow, find, hire our producer and sound engineer and editor, Gabe Harder at GabeHarder.com. I mean, not today, but when the website's done. We also have a Patreon. It's just Patreon/QuickQuestion, all one word.
Huh. What do, I mean, I guess I could go to the Patreon and find out, but the people who donate money, what do they get out of it? I feel like we haven't done anything. to thank those people?
I think that there was something like they could ask a question. If they donated $5 or something like that, they could ask a question and we would start answering those questions. I think no one has decided to donate $5.
Yeah, I certainly don't recall answering a question from a non-Soren.
But yeah, I think you're still welcome to do that. If you donate $5 and in your Patreon you put in a question, we will answer it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to promise that.
Yeah, and if you donate $10,000,
Dan, nope.
Torrin's going to make a brand new season of Dispatches from Space.
I would love to do that.
Oh, there was another thing I wanted to bring up. Either email us at the thing that Soren said, or tweet at Make Me Bacon, please. As most of you probably know, we just did a run of 4 guests on the show. And I'm genuinely curious what everyone feels about that. If they like the guests or if they want it to be just the two of us. We're still trying to tinker with the format, and we'll definitely have more guests on in the future. But I really want to know, did you find them as fascinating as we, I think, very clearly did? Or do you just want just Pippin and Jordan?
Jordan? I'm pointing at my own chest.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's very kind of you, Dan. I don't think that's probably true. All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.